Well, we have a special guest in the studio this afternoon.
He's special, all right. Look, before we start, Frank, and you've introduced him, have you, or have not?
No, not really.
I would introduce him to you as a dear friend of mine. I would say this. I don't know what he would say. A true brother of mine who we've traveled the road together for many, many years. We have so many friends in common and relatives in common that I would really say to you that I've always felt like you were the extra brother I didn't have. You were the ugly one we didn't have. But Willie Mahone, you're a name that's to be reckoned with in that you've always had a good cause, and you've always, in my heart, you've always been done in the most professional and respectful way. So I welcome Willie Mahone in your new capacity or your additional capacity as president of our local NAACP, correct?
That's correct. Thanks, Tim, for that gracious introduction.
I do mean that, though, Willie.
Yeah, and I know. And it's reciprocated. I feel that you are a true friend. You're someone that I can confide in and expect some honesty from. And that's very important. That's very important. So I really appreciate that. Really appreciate that.
Well, I think we have the – Willie and I are probably on 100% polar opposites when it comes to politics and things such as that. But there is a deeper relationship, and I think if people had the same relationship with each other, and I'm not, this isn't the religious hour, but we have a goal that we want to live a certain way, and it doesn't mean we can't express our views. It doesn't mean we can't disagree. I mean, if we didn't, this world would be a very boring place. But I asked Willie and to come on and be on the show, and from time to time, this doesn't have to be your first and last appearance. I extend that to you. I don't know, Willie, and if you don't mind, I'll call you Willie because I can call you
fine.
Mr. Mahone,
that's
Esquire.
Fine. No, Willie's fine.
President of the. But Willie, here's what. There's a lot going on, and I think one of the things that I'm happy with. And I'm not kissing your butt or anything, but the reins of the local NAACP have we don't hear about it. It's gone away, and I know it hasn't. And now that you've stepped into this role, I know as a person who wants to get things accomplished that you'll not be that wallflower that sits back and let the world go by. So you have stepped into the role, correct?
I have, and that's exactly. Our approach here. We want to be, as an organization, we want to be proactive.
Yes.
We want to look at long-term solutions.
Yes.
I've been associated with the local NAACP, since the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I worked very closely with Mr. Nickens. We did some things together. I haven't been as active since Mr. Nickens, I'm talking about Lloyd Nickens, who had been the leader for quite a while, since he relinquished the reins, I haven't been as active. I've become active again. Now, what we did or what was happening when I was involved with Mr. Nickens, we basically reacted to complaints.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to respond to issues that came up in the community. But I think that we want to try to be more proactive, more long-term, and more looking at more institutional, developmental kinds of things. And in that vein, we formulated several committees. We have an economic development committee. We have an education committee. We have a government affairs committee. We have a communication committee. We have a membership committee. The ones that are most active, of course, are the economic committee, the education committee, and the government affairs committee. And we've embarked to look at some issues. Of course, the government affairs committee was very, very active during the recent municipal elections. We sent out questionnaires to the candidates. We asked for their response to various issues that we thought that needed to be addressed, and the candidates responded. We have those responses in our records, and so we have it on record, mm-hmm. what the candidates said when they were running.
Exactly.
Which often varies from what they actually do, but at least we have it on record as to what they said when they were running.
I want to slow you down here a second. I think you need to address what the NAACP is, because there, if you just watch television, you don't know. First of all, this is not a new organization. And I want you to, if you give us a little bit of history, if you would.
Okay, thank you very much. The NAACP is the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, founded in the early 1900s, founded as a result, to a large extent, as a result to some waves that were happening in the 1900s. We were experiencing as a wave of lynchings. We were experiencing a wave of conduct in the country that was certainly undemocratic. And the organization started out to address those kinds of issues. It put out a magazine, the Crisis Magazine, was published by W.B. Du Bois, a noted sociologist, very renowned figure. And the organization has continued to address issues of social justice. Now, the organization really came into the limelight in the 1950s through the work of Thurgood Marshall, who litigated the case Brown v. Board of Education, which resulted in the theoretically the abolition of a segregated school system. And that really put the organization on the map, per se, from that perspective. And, of course, during the civil rights movement of the 60s, NAACP was very active in terms of pursuing issues of social justice and the abolition of segregation in public accommodations in public places, we have a very famous person, renowned, was Mega Evers, who headed up the NAACP down in Mississippi, who was assassinated. But again, on the forefront of social justice kind of issues. So that's a kind of like concise compendium of the organization itself. It's primarily being involved social justice issues and from the perspective of African-American citizenry. So that's...
Can anyone join the NAACP?
It is a 501c3 agency. It's open to any person. As a 501c3 agency, and this is like a charitable nonprofit, we are precluded from having racially or ethnic precluded status. So, yes, as a matter of fact, the founder of the NAACP was a white woman who happened to be a social worker. So this is an organization that is open to all ethnicities.
Something to say?
Mentioning that, Tim, I'd like to ask Mr. Mahone, before we get into some of the missions these days of the Frederick NAACP and some of the national and local issues, a little bit about yourself.
I don't believe
we had you on. Yeah.
That's what I just said. I said he's a well-educated man. I was going to take him now.
You have
tell us a little bit
Frederick.
About yourself, Willie.
Well, I'm...
How wonderful you are, you know.
Well, I'm not so sure. I'm a product of the local school system. Went to West Frederick Mill and Frederick High. Graduated from the local school system. Played on the 1969 football team, undefeated 10-0, okay? I think four members from that team ended up at playing professional ball at some level. But at any rate, went to undergraduate school at Towson University. It was Towson State College at that time, down in Baltimore, and went from there. I came back here and worked for about a year at the Frederick County Mental Health. We had a drug and alcohol walk-in center down on the corner of South Market and West All Saints Street. Worked there. It was very, very fulfilling. Got to work with people in the community. And then I ended up going to law school, went to University of Maryland Law School, graduated from there, I think, around 1978. Been such a long period of time. Long period of time. And then I went to work as a fellow at Legal Services of Miami. Stayed there for about a year and a half. And then I came and worked at the Attorney General's office under the Sachs administration, and was involved in what they call deinstitutionalization. What we were doing, we were identifying people who were in the mental health system who were improperly there. And so what we were doing, we were getting them out of the mental health system. But unfortunately, we weren't committed to a continuum of care. So a lot of those people left the institution. They ended up on the street. Became very, very circular. But it was good work. And then I went over to Antioch law school from there, and I was a law school instructor. I don't call myself a professor, but I was a law school instructor, taught law school in a clinical program for about 2 years, and then came back here to Frederick and started practicing law.
Damn, you're old.
Yeah, how about that?
And, I'm just joking.
And then I
He's younger than I am.
At one point, I went down to Baltimore and worked with St. Ambrose Legal Services, and we did housing, and we did represented people who were buying houses or were losing their houses. Ended up doing a whole lot of Chapter 13 bankruptcy, things of that sort, to save people houses, and did negotiations and mediations with HUD and different organizations to help people maintain their properties, and did some predatory lending law, and then came back here to practice law, and now I'm heading up the NAACP.
That's so great. It just come full circle. But you're just like, we had to come home. Yeah. I mean, you know, and we talk all these big games. I traveled and worked the world. I'm back here. And you and I both served on the NAACP. We both served on the Human Relations Council at one time in our lives.
That's right. I think in the early 80s, I served on the Frederick County Human Relations Council.
I also
served on the Frederick City Board of Zoning Appeals.
Yep.
And on committees with the Board of Education, you know, over the years. Mm-hmm. I think the Disproportionality Committee and some other committees and some other organizations that I really don't recall.
But nor do we want to. But anyhow, no, they're all good. Willie, tell us about what you're breathing new life into the local chapter. It's had its ups and downs like any organization been around for a while. Now it's on the upswing. What do you hope to accomplish? What are you bringing forward as far as your mantra, your goals?
Well, one of the things we're looking at is education. We have been concerned with, as you probably know, almost every other year we see reports of the school systems not being able to or having attracted minority teachers. I think the last report that I saw was that maybe the minority students are maybe 35% or 40% of the population, but the minority teachers are like around 3-5%. And the educators recognize that having someone in the classroom that looks like the child has an impact on the child's reaction and learning. So we're looking at that issue. That issue always comes up. And so that's one issue we're concerning about.
Have you spoken to the school board or to the superintendent?
We're concerned about that issue and also suspensions. We looked at suspensions and we were finding that the African-American students were getting suspended at an alarming rate. They are 39% of the school population, but 56% of the actual out-of-school suspensions. So had a meeting with Dr. Alban, the superintendent of school. We sat down and talked about several issues. The meeting was very productive. We talked about programs that they're looking at instituting, and we talked about things that we would like to see some movement on. One of the things that we have proposed this not only to Dr. Alban, but to the Board of Education. And the proposal is this. If the suspension are so out of whack as they are, 56% of the out-of-school suspensions of African-American students, where they're only 39% of the student population, we have proposed a moratorium on suspension of African-American students. Just don't suspend them.
Why?
But not a permanent moratorium.
We were talking about projects underway under his leadership, and is your leadership for more than a year, I hope?
About one year.
But you get elected every year? Or
yes.
You can get reelected?
Yeah, yes.
Because it's going to take, what you're proposing to me off air, it's going to take a while. I don't mean years, but I don't mean decades, but it's going to take a while.
Yeah, but what you do, you put these things into process.
Right.
And once you put them into process, the system should address them themselves. I mean, once you put them into process, I've been involved in other kinds of movements here or other kinds of concerns when I can recall where we looked at the hiring process for the city police system.
Remember that.
And that resulted in a court order, and that order is actually still being implemented. So what you can do, you can put a process in place, and you follow through with that process, irrespective of who is in the leadership of the organization.
I agree 100%. I just want things to, you know, like you said in the beginning, this is a new day, and let's go forward, and let's, and you're attacking things in this way. I shouldn't use the word attack, somebody get upset. But you're attacking the problems with programs rather than incident by incident? Because I think that's what needs to be done.
And that's what we're attempting to do. We're attempting to look at it from a programmatic perspective. We're attempting to look at it from like a long-term perspective. I was talking about the suspensions, and I was saying that we're requesting a moratorium on the suspensions. But we're requesting a total moratorium. What we're saying is that when you get to the point where you're suspending a child of color, prior to that suspension actually going into effect, bring in another level of review. Bring in another level of review, another committee or whatever to look at that to make sure that is happening in a proper manner. Now, the superintendent of school...
But should the white kid be also... You're saying if you have a child of color, they need to be scrutinized. Shouldn't they all be scrutinized?
Well, what we find is that the system as it exists is not having an adverse impact on the kids who are not kids of color.
Okay.
What we do, what we see that from a numerical perspective, again, that the African-American kids or the non-white kids are 39%.
So that means Hispanic also?
That's right. That's correct.
Okay.
That's
okay.
correct. 39% of the student population, but they constitute 56% of the out-of-school suspensions. You see a glaring disproportionality there. Now, the superintendent of school, Dr. Terry Alban, said, and I quote her, disproportionality is concerning us. Mm-hmm. She acknowledges that. Then she goes on to say that, and this is her quote, research shows that the same offense might get a different reaction depending on the race of the student. Now, that's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. This is what Dr. Alban says. She goes on to say that they are trying to unpack our own journeys and our own cultural competencies and implicit bias. Now, Dr. Alban, the superintendent of schools, says that the school system is trying to unpack their own journeys, competencies, and implicit bias. Now, this is what she says. This is not myself. So she's more or less.
One part that bothers me, not bothers me about what she's saying or you're saying. I'm thinking is, you know, I see African American as a population of color.
Mm-hmm.
Hispanic, I think you're grouping too many things together here, and I think that the African American, in my humble opinion, Frank, I don't want to hear what you have to say, is being called up in something that may not even be effective to the African American community. Doesn't mean, because it's unless the NAACP is for all person's rights, you know, you may be dealing with all Hispanic kids. Really? True?
It's true, and I invite, it's true that it might be, but I invite an investigation of that.
Yeah.
I'm almost willing to bet that what you're going to find, and we can look at it, but what we're going to find, we're going to find that the majority of those, that disproportionality is African-American male. I'm willing to say
that. I'll take that bet.
I would take that bet. Well,
because not that I'm saying that African American kids are bad. I'm just saying I don't think the populations know the influx of legal and illegal El Salvadorians and things like that. Not that they're bad people, but they have come into this population, and you know, I from the teachers that I know at schools close by, they're having trouble with children of not African American descent, but of Hispanic descent.
Well,
you have a purpose. If it's one, like you said, it's too many.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you would really be shocked to find out the numbers.
Well, I don't think we need to move the needle here. What we have here, we have the superintendent of school saying again. And her quote is, research shows that the same offense might get a different reaction depending upon the race of the student.
But that could be Hispanic or African-American.
It very well could be. But again, see, what we can do is this. We don't have to conjecture. We can get the data from the Board of Education. And once we get the data from the Board of Education, let's sit down and talk about
it
again.
You think they'll give it to you?
Well, it's there. I don't see why they can't. We have a right to it.
I agree. You're singing to the choir, brother.
No. It's there. And the board. I bet the Board of Education will. They have it then, and they will produce it. And then after it, what I want to suggest is this, Tim. Since we're betting, after they produce the data, and if the data shows what I suspect that mm-hmm. We're primarily talking about African-American kids mm-hmm. who are the victim of this disproportionality, then I want you to commit to my suggestion of the moratorium with the instant review.
I will do that, but also the African-American community I thought was like 10 to 12% of Frederick County. Does that sound right?
The latest data that I can recall mm-hmm. is of Frederick County is around 10%.
Yeah, 10%.
Not quite that.
What's the Hispanic population percentage?
The data that I can recall, Tim, you're pressing me on this, but I think that it's probably pretty close to the African-American population. But we can get that data.
You'll see in my remembrances. Mm. It's almost twice as much.
The
percentage
of the Hispanic may very well be. Now I can tell you for Frederick City, I know for Frederick City the African American population is like 18%, mm-hmm. and I think the Hispanic population is around 11% in the city itself. From the data that I just got, I guess maybe a month or so ago. But that notwithstanding, I will reiterate what mm-hmm. I said earlier.
Yeah.
If there's one child
exactly.
that's being impacted by—
Because of bias.
Yes. If there's mm-hmm. one child that's being impacted by bias, implicit or otherwise, mm-hmm. The superintendent uses the word implicit bias. But if there's one child being impacted by that, it's one child too many. Now, one thing that you pointed out, Tim, is that when we talk about overall suspensions, mm-hmm. we may not be talking about a humongous number. We may be talking about a smaller number.
Exactly.
And see, my point is this. If the number is smaller, then that means that we will have less to look at, to review.
Correct.
And so in terms of resources involved in that review, it wouldn't be humongous resources. All the more reason to do it.
Sure.
Because, again, I think education is such a fundamental and important right in this country, anywhere in the world, that we should look very, very closely at
it. It bothers me that we cannot even determine through the Board of Education of how many students we have who are illegal and legal. Don't want names. Give us numbers.
Well, I'm not so much concerned about...
I am.
Well,
because it's affecting your community. It's affecting the black community.
Well, I've worked with undocumented people. I don't think God made any illegal people. I work with undocumented people.
He made borders, though.
Well, no, I think man drew borders. Mm-hmm. And we can look back to times specifically in the history of this country when borders were drawn, mm-hmm. When the Native Americans didn't have the borders that were imposed on them. So those borders were drawn, and they weren't drawn by the Native Americans, who now we call illegal. From my perspective, the first illegal immigrant was Columbus. But we ain't going to get into that.
Okay.
I
agree with you, by the way.
when we start talking about undocumented people,
And I'm not talking about... I don't care about their stat. I mean, don't take this to where I'm saying, oh, we got to do something. No, I'm just concerned, mm-hmm. as a taxpayer, as mm-hmm. a citizen, mm-hmm. as a supporter of our school system, mm-hmm. we don't know the impact, and we need to know the impact to do something about it. What? We either got to get federal money, because it's coming out of your pocket. We've got to have something that protects us as a school system. In other words, I know at certain schools close by that the classroom will change twice a year at least, meaning kids come in, they get a couple months, they're out. Doesn't mean they retire. It means that another group comes in.
Well,
that's something that needs to be dealt with.
Well, I from my tax dollar, I'm not so much concerned that my tax dollar is going to educate a child who's undocumented. I'm more concerned that my tax dollar is going to support a police system that is not hiring properly, or my tax dollar is going to support a school system where the staff does not reflect the composition of the taxpaying students. I'm more concerned about that misuse of my tax dollar. But you have a right to be concerned about the misuse of your tax dollar.
Here's why. Well, mm-hmm. I don't see it as something that I can't do. It's the fact that take my child in school, your child in school. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when the classroom gets to 30, 35, mm. that affects my kids' education. Mm-hmm. So I'm being so very benevolent and allowing, yes, we can bring in all the people you want. But it comes to a point when we start to hurt other kids, and that's wrong. So And I agree with you. But I will think you'll find also in the school system, it's probably the most liberal bunch of individuals, God bless them all, that I've ever dealt with. So when the superintendent herself says that she feels there may be a bias or something here, that bothers me because it is a very liberal system of, you know, it's we're going to do the best for everybody. There's not. So I will talk about that. We have to take a very short break or to the phones. Glenn, good afternoon. You are with Frank Mitchell, your most amicable host, Tim May, and the one and only Willie Mahone. What say you, Glenn?
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you. I want to just say that with all due respect to your guest, I just don't think he's fully informed as to what the school board is doing. Approximately 15 years ago in the Frederick News Post, my kids' Ligonier High School classes were reported as to the honor roll, and in both of them, both grades, two-thirds of the damn class was on the honor roll. That's impossible, okay? So politically correct crap has run rampant through schools for a very, very long time. Now, about a year ago, I started watching virtually all the televised school board hearings. I'm 72. I'm retired. I've got the time to do that. There's one thing that's very clear. Everything that the school board deals with is social engineering. It's not the three R's. Please, citizens of Frederick County, just disabuse yourself of the notion that they're engaged in education. They are engaged in social engineering. And if you take a look at some of those hearings, you'll find that these racial issues are, in fact, being dealt with in a very extraordinary way. The public hearings that they also encourage bring up all of the issues that the citizens of the county have as concerns. And right now there's been a tremendous amount of hearings on the AHD type of stuff for the kids. Mm-hmm. Tremendous numbers of kids. Well, it's full employment for psychiatrists, for Pete's sake. When I was in school in the 50s, we didn't have anybody with that kind of stuff. You know, we might have a polio kid or so, someone with myopic vision, but this AHD stuff is just out of control, guaranteed full employment for psychologists, social workers, and psychiatrists. So right. Watch some of the hearings and see for yourself that, in fact, racial issues are very much a priority. They are being discussed, and that does include the black population. In any event, best to you all, and thanks for the time.
Thank you, Glenn, for your insight there. I don't know that he said anything that sounds unusual. I see people see what they want to see and how they view it. Do you attend Board of Education meetings?
Yes, I have historically attended Board of Education meetings. I just attended, I guess, about 2 weeks ago, and I put forth to the Board of Education two requests. One, the moratorium on suspension of African-American kids or kids of color until there's another level of review. What I'm saying is that once the school system has made that determination, before it becomes finalized, bring in another level of review. And that review should include someone from the community who's not employed by the Board of Education, and let them review that. The other thing that I suggested to the Board of Education that we are requesting is a minority Affairs Advisory Committee, a Minority Affairs Committee. Now, what happens, Tim, is the board is authorized to have standing committees, and the board has, I think, at least 8 standing committees. And what we're requesting is that there be a standing committee to deal with minority affairs, and that would include suspensions, teacher hirings, student placement. That's something we're looking at as well, as to whether students are placed within the curriculum, because when we looked at this about 20 years ago, we found that the African-American students, particularly the African-American male students, were placed in special ed and, I guess, directed, basically non-educable classes more so than other kids. Well, we reject the fact that our kids are mentally retarded to a greater extent than other kids in the population. It's like poppycock. So we need to look at we're looking, and that kind of committee, we look at all those issues. Listen, the Board of Education repeatedly acknowledged, and the gentleman just called in is correct to some extent. Mm-hmm. He says that the Board of Education discusses race issues. Well, that's the problem. They always discuss it, but it's never implemented, and they discuss the same thing every other year.
Willie Mahone, thank you. Mm-hmm. We've had an hour. I invite you back because I want to talk about what you're up against. I want to take this deeper because as we talked off air, we've said a lot off air that we should be saying on air that, you know, everyone wants to recognize the problem. And when we recognize it, that's great, but it doesn't do anything to change it.
Right.
And I think you're welcome again. We'll schedule another time when you can come back with us. And I would look forward to that if that's possible.
Thanks, Dale.
Always.
Dale.